Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. At the 2026 National ICE-T Conference in Orlando, Florida, expert researchers and clinicians discussed their presentations focusing on key advancements in immune effector therapy across different hematologic oncology populations. First, Dr. Benjamin Diamond from the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine spoke about his presentation on using bispecific antibodies for the management of multiple myeloma.
This is a rapidly growing field. These drugs have revolutionized the treatment of multiple myeloma. It's not even a subtle way to say it, really transformed the treatment. And so now the question is just, how do we best use these drugs? I mean, everyone needs to be on them. So how do we best use them? How do we sequence them? How do we make sure that every patient has access to them? And then how do we figure out just the optimal management of each of them? So the inspiration is there. We just need to increase access for everybody. Because we have a gluttony of riches and we have multiple targets available and there are more coming. Right now, the approved targets are BCMA-directed and also GPRC5D-directed. They each have their own sort of set of idiosyncrasies and toxicities, and that's primarily the way that I make my decision. Currently, we have all these agents approved as monotherapies in the late relapse setting. We're getting access to all of them in the early relapse setting as well, and they're only going to come earlier and earlier. And both, at this point, targeting GPRC5D and BCMA seem to be pretty equivalently efficacious for the most part. The difference is in the toxicity profiles. And so based on the toxicity, whether it's going to be infection from the BCMA-directed therapies versus dysgeusia, skin, hair, nail toxicity from the GPRC5D-directed therapy, that's sort of how I make my decision. If I've got a patient with kyphosis, recurrent pneumonias, COPD, we're obviously going to be reaching for talquetamab or another GPRC5D-directed therapy. For everybody else, it's going to be BCMA-directed therapy. The biggest issue with the bispecific antibodies is the infection toxicity. What good is all that efficacy if a patient is going to succumb to an infection? So for me, I consider IVIG primary prophylaxis and a lot of antibiosis prophylaxis, considering like Bactrim, Levaquin for the first month, for example, acyclovir. These are things that are necessary supportive care. I actually consider IVIG to be mandatory, at least for my patients on BCMA-directed bispecific therapy. So all of those monotherapy regimens are actually doublets, right? Because IVIG is included. Tecdara, that doublet, is actually a triplet because you need the IVIG. So we often start these, oftentimes even before the ramp up, especially for high-risk patients, because infections can and do happen unless you primary prophylax them. So I presented a lot of data. I mean, it's great that we have so much data. I think the main points that I want people to take away are just being cerebral about our treatment sequencing. We are lucky and we have a lot of choices. And so it makes sense that we should try and choose the best product for the right situation. And that means that, you know, when a patient has high disease burden, we infer that there's high soluble BCMA, there's going to be a sink. And maybe you consider either debulking or using a CAR because you know that your BCMA-directed therapies might struggle. It also means that you shouldn't be shy about re-challenging patients if they blow right through their initial trial of a BCMA-directed bispecific antibody. It doesn't mean that the disease is intrinsically resistant. It could just mean it was the wrong time to deliver that treatment. So being cerebral, making sure that you use appropriate antibiosis, prophylaxis, and IVIG because that is essential. And then also considering the use of prophylactic tocilizumab to facilitate access and outpatient dosing to these drugs.
Next, Tiba Alsagir, a clinical pharmacist from Baptist Health South Florida, spoke about her presentation on developing a precision approach for mitigating CAR T cell therapy toxicity.
The inspiration for that particular talk was actually the data that's emerging on what biomarkers to look for and how that determines what toxicities are actually going to emerge and how we pull the trigger. And there is a 2026 ASTCT consensus guidance document that goes over what those biomarkers and what we should be looking at. So they're, you know, they stratify it into something that we must have or should have, can have, and nice to have. So it's nice to have that consensus guidance to guide us in terms of what we should really be doing as routine testing and should be readily available versus things that should be tested just to keep for research purposes. I think the ASTCT criteria is in many ways very helpful right now and solidified. Most, you know, many institutions are using the same language to grade patients what we're really falling short on is the other toxicities that are not CRS and ICANS. So those are the delayed or non-ICANS neurotoxicities, for instance, the IECHS or enterocolitis that comes with some of those BCMA CAR-T toxicities. So I think that's where there is a lot of gaps that we still don't know where we're headed. And that was basically something I wanted to investigate with this presentation. We still don't have the answer. We don't know what is a true threshold, whether it's just ALC, whether it's, different markers to tell us, okay, this is when you should pull the trigger for prophylaxis based on the different agents that are available with preventing delayed neurotoxicity, because those delayed neurotoxicities, we don't have good treatments for them. And then another thing is the differentiation between CRS and IECHS, which kind of gives you that ferritin cutoff and tells you, okay, this is the moment at, slightly above 7,420, if I recall correctly, is the cutoff where you want to actually switch and start your treatment for IECHS and escalate therapy. Another thing that I did not mention is, the difference between CRS and ICANS versus those delayed neurotoxicities or non-conventional toxicities is with CRS and ICANS, we're seeing more inflammatory markers and cytokines, but with those delayed neurotoxicities, they are more CD4 positive CAR driven that are infiltrating the tissue. So it is a different mechanism or pathophysiology. And when biopsies were taken from those patients that did have those toxicities, those CARs were actually present there. And on that note, pre-apheresis CD4 to CD8 ratio is also important to have obtained, because that can tell you that your collection is going to be skewed more towards that CD4, and maybe that patient would be more likely to have toxicities.
Finally, Dr. Nikesh Shah from Tampa General Hospital and Dr. Carlos Silva from the Memorial Healthcare System discussed a debate session in which they advocated for bispecific antibodies and CAR T-cell therapy, respectively, for patients with relapsed or refractory follicular lymphoma.
We got to have a really fun debate with Dr. Carlos Silva down at Memorial in South Florida, and really just talk about the pros and cons about bispecific antibody therapy versus CAR T-cell therapy in patients with follicular lymphoma. We got assigned topics by the conference directors, but I was on the pro bispecific antibody side. But I think at the end of the day, there's a lot of pros and cons to both. And it's really just about having a conversation with the patient and knowing the patient in front of you to pick the best therapy. I really try to lay out the options for them and say, look, we have CAR T therapy, we have bispecific antibody or a bispecific combination, or we have options that are neither of those, right? And really just go through the logistics and the toxicities and obviously the outcomes. But you really just have to get a sense of the goals of the patient in front of you, right? Sometimes some people will say, I would much rather have a one in quote, kind of quote unquote, one and done infusion and then not have to get infusions again for hopefully a really long time. Whereas some people say, I don't want to go through, potential hospitalization and higher risk of side effects. I would rather just come, once a week or however often I need to come for my bispecific antibody. And I think a lot of that also depends on like where somebody is in the stage of life, right? We know a lot of our younger patients who are either in the workforce or have young kids, things like that, are like, I would rather have a compressed timeline than be really busy in the beginning with CAR T-cell therapy and hopefully have a really long treatment-free interval. Whereas some of our like much more older retired patients don't necessarily mind coming in as often so I think that makes a big difference there. The big thing I try to really point out to people is CAR T is a kind of quote unquote one and done, but there's still a lot of visits before and after. And so there's actually a really good kind of time toxicity study that came out of Dr. Major at University of Colorado and looked at this for this exact question. And it kind of was the same as what we think about in clinical practice. Like with CAR T therapy, things were a lot more compressed and the time toxicity was a lot more pushed forward into kind of the first 2 months. But then things really leveled off after that and much more quiet. Whereas with bispecifics, it was again that what you said, slow and steady approach with not as intense, but just slow and steady. I think the key point is that it's always better for the patient to have more options. And thankfully, we are in the space now in follicular that we have multiple really good options for patients. And it's difficult for us as providers to have these detailed, nuanced conversations with so many options. But it's good for the patient to be able to really select the therapy that makes the most sense for them, that is based on their goals and their specific situation.
I think this comes up as both therapies are currently recommended for relapsed refractory lymphoma beyond two lines of therapy. And it addresses the reality of the real world and who has access to CAR T-cell therapy or not, who has access to bispecific therapy, which one is the right candidate for one therapy or not, and understanding where the field is and how do we sequence them or how do we look at them and what is the patient selection for that. So I'll be advocating on the CAR T-cell part, which is very exciting. I think that it is important to understand what the patient does and how they want to spend their time, also their situation, right? Because, let's say for CAR T-cell therapy, we need to have a caregiver, whether they have the access to a CAR T-cell center or if they're referred to us earlier in a way that they can undergo CAR T. But it will be important to mention that the data for CAR T-cell therapy for follicular lymphoma has shown that at 10 years, it shows potential curability options. You know, we have a 47% lymphoma-free survival in the 10-year follow-up of tisocel, just recently shared at the New England Journal of Medicine. So I think it's important to explain to the patient whether they want a one-time treatment, where still, if they relapse, they will have access and could be eligible to receive bispecifics. And vice versa, if a patient, let's say, has some comorbidities or concerns that the patient doesn't want to receive CAR T-cell therapy, and if there's low risk or concern is low for transformation, it could potentially be treated with a bispecific. And, you know, the mosunetuzumab data showing good responses, duration of response, although it's inferior to CAR T-cell so far, is very good. And I think that these patients can still benefit from CAR T-cell later on if they, need it, considering we have different targets. And it's that part of sequencing that we need to see how the field, ages and see what the data looks later on. I think that my point is that we're not comparing like a versus, but I think it's actually a combined effort that both therapies, bispecifics and CAR T-cell therapy are required and they can work, in helping each other in different times. They're both good options and luckily we have them. I think that the best take-home message is that we don't have just chemotherapy, right? And that we can alternate those therapies. We have candidates for one therapy or the other. Yes, we do have deeper responses, longer duration of response, one-time intervention with CAR T-cell therapy at expenses of some upfront, toxicity, economic toxicity, plus the toxicity as well, a higher rate, but we have different constructs that can adjust some of that toxicity. But it will be important to also remind everyone in attendance that bispecifics also come with risks, and it comes with infectious risks. It comes with a financial burden later on. So it is important to understand that. And how do you present it to the patient so the patient can also decide, and that we don't skew the option just by how we present it or how our center practices.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.